5 p.m. hour of the show is brought to you by You Build It. Don't forget, text me 1-800-465-8770. Let me know where you're listening from. What kind of segments you want to hear? If you remember an old segment, I'll pull it up. I'll play it. We'll get it done during this 5 p.m. hour. 1-800-465-8770. Now this.
The Monologue.
This is actually a really disturbing story. It comes out of Bob Woodward's upcoming book. It's called Peril. And he says that the Joint Chiefs Chairman, General Mark Milley, held a secret meeting and took secret action to stop President Trump from potentially taking military action in the last days of his presidency. And while a whole bunch of left-wing bots on Twitter are claiming this is heroic, there are other words for when the military secretly thwarts a civilian elected president. I promise you, hero is not one of them. I promise you that. Treason comes to mind. Treasonous comes to mind. An attempted coup comes to mind. Is it as serious as that? Yeah, it is. This is incredible. This is absolutely authoritarian. This is remarkable that anyone dares to think that he's somehow a hero. According to CNN's coverage of this book, it says Milley, quote, was certain that Trump had gone into a serious mental decline in the aftermath of the election, with Trump now all but manic, screaming at officials and constructing his own alternative reality about endless election conspiracies. The book says that Trump could go rogue. Milley told his senior staff, according to the book, you never know what a president's trigger point is. You don't get to decide that, Mark Milley. You work for the president. You are not the president. And yet, they say, Milley took extraordinary action and called a secret meeting in his Pentagon office on January 8th to review the process for military action, including launching nuclear weapons. Speaking to senior military officials in charge of the National Military Command Center, the Pentagon's war room, Milley instructed them not to take orders from anyone unless he was involved. Quote, no matter what you are told, you do the procedure, you do the process, and I'm part of that procedure. He then went around the room, looked each officer in the eye, and asked them to verbally confirm they understood. That is the work of a madman. That is the work of someone who is a traitor to his job. If any military leader did that to Biden, they would be court-martialed. You had one member of the military call out, or at least just question, the Afghanistan situation. What happened to him? He was relieved of his duty. And apparently he was taking orders, Mark Milley, from Nancy Pelosi. They write, Milley received a blunt phone call from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, according to the book. Woodward exclusively obtained a transcript of the call during which Milley tried to reassure Pelosi that the nuclear weapons were safe. Pelosi pushed back. Quote, what I'm saying to you is that if they couldn't even stop him from an assault on the Capitol, who even knows what else he may do? And is there anybody in charge at that White House who was doing anything but kissing his fat butt all over this? It's a weird way for a 116-year-old to talk, by the way. Pelosi continued, you know he's crazy. He's been crazy for a long time. According to the book, Milley responded, Madam Speaker, I agree with you on everything. After the call, Milley decided he had to act. He told his top service chiefs to watch anything, everything, quote, at all times. He called the director of the National Security Agency and told him, needles up, keep watching, scan. And then he told then CIA director, aggressively watch everything, 360. They even report in this piece that, quote, Milley was overseeing the mobilization of America's national security state without the knowledge of the American people or the rest of the world. That should terrify the absolute hell out of you. Any military personnel who holds that kind of power, they're not elected, they don't run this country. We have a president for that. And I would hold the same exact position even under Biden. We have a system in place that does not give this kind of power to members of the military, and we do that on purpose. We separate that on purpose. That's why we have the system of governments that we do. This is terrifying. And shame on anyone celebrating this. He had secret conversations with the Chinese. And it's being celebrated and lauded over at CNN.
The interview.
Look, they're not so much warning signs as they are sirens that the state is heading in a very bad direction, particularly when it comes to first responders. You've had agency after agency say that thanks to the vaccine mandate coming from Governor Jay Inslee, you're going to lose a lot of staff members, particularly amongst firefighters. Joining me on the line is someone who understands that. He's a captain with Snohomish County Fire Department. Neil Kelly joins me on the line. Captain Kelly, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, hey, Jason, thanks for having me on. I think as I start, I got to say that I don't represent my agency or the local. I've been working for our fire department for over 25 years.
Yeah, and you're coming on speaking out as a citizen who is impacted by this. What do you think, based on just your experience, your conversations, talking with folks, what do you think is going to happen at the end of the mandate for the folks who don't get vaccinated? What impact will that have?
Yeah, you know, you use the word sirens. I think that's a great word for it because as currently written, Proclamation 2114 is going to have significant impacts on frontline workers. It'll transfer immediately into our communities and emergency services. And I think across the state, we're going to have massive problems. It started for us just getting some of the people that disagreed with the mandate together. And I'm talking about, you know, three, four, five people. And when word got out about a meeting that I was going to have at a local restaurant, we instantly had 10 locals showing up. I'm talking about locals from Marysville, Arlington, Stanwood, Eastside, Seattle, wow. Everett. And kind of the resounding theme of that was, hey, what are we going to do when we're actually forced to either get a shot or provide for our family? The resounding answer out of that is that it's criminal to be forced to make a decision like that. And so we wanted to gather some information, and what we did is what we decided to do is send an anonymous survey out to our 300-person membership. The results came back as I kind of thought they would, that the lion's share of the men and women who work for our department disagreed with the mandate wholeheartedly. Now, this is vaccinated, this is unvaccinated, mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Everybody disagreed with that. But what it further produced was a startling number, and out of our almost 300-person membership just in South County, 55 of those people were willing to be, if I could use a state words, terminated for just choosing not to get a shot.
Yeah, and by the way, just real quickly to point out, because you point out to that particular piece, there's also 43% of the membership said they really haven't decided yet what they're going to do.
Yeah, that was another piece of it, is that a lot of members said, hey, listen, even if I hear that people are getting fired for this or undisciplinary termination, as the state says, that we might follow. I think emergency services are already, the morale's really low anyways due to House Bill 1310. We're seeing police and fire just really not being able to do their jobs, which is, in the end, helping people. It's why we all kind of got into it. So it's really disheartening then to be forced to make a choice like this. And what really got to me, I think, is taking phone calls, literally every day, I'm not exaggerating that, of men and women who are calling me and they're saying, hey, Neil, my significant other is crying in the bathroom right now. My kids are scared. I don't know if I'm going to have a job in 8 weeks. I've got friends that are putting their houses on the market. And they're filling out resumes. They're having a mass exodus out of the state. And we're talking about good men and women that we need working, skilled laborers.
It's shocking to me that no one in the governor's office seems to at least be willing to acknowledge the problems that are clearly coming. And you're not the only one who's making this point. I'll give you about 20 seconds that we have left. At the end of the day, for you, why are you against this mandate?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm against this mandate because I believe in some freedom of choice in America. My grandfather was a conscientious objector, and they made a way for him to still serve his country. And I think if the governor's really pro-Washington, Washingtonian, like he claims, then I would suggest an overhaul of Proclamation 2114 to include provisions that would protect the very people that have been serving the state selflessly.
Yeah, I won't hold my breath on that one, even though that's what should happen. They should just scrap this entire mandate. I'm pro-vaccine. I've gotten the vaccine myself.
Yeah.
But I'm not someone who...
Too.
Yeah, and you've gotten the vaccine as well. There have been a ton of people who have spoken up and said, yeah, no, I'm vaccinated. I just disagree with this mandate. And I'm in the same camp as you. We've been talking with Neil Kelly. He's a captain with South Snohomish County Fire Department. He's not speaking here, though, on behalf of the department or his union, just as himself. Neil Kelly, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Jason, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Now this.
Best of the Jason Rant Show, 5 p.m. hour. It's producer Peyton bringing you some of the best content, some of your content. You've texted in and asked for some of these segments, so I appreciate you guys contributing to the 5 p.m. hour, to the whole show today. We got so much more coming up. Don't go anywhere. Right now, let's jump back into the best of the Jason Rant Show.
The Monologue.
There have been more than 740 homeless encampment fires in Seattle this year. We're on track to have the worst record ever for homeless encampment fires. And to think, by the way, we're on track to have the worst ever when we've already hit over 740 is shocking. Well, today there was another one. Happened early this morning. Broke out at a homeless encampment. Started at the camp right off of Dearborn Street and I-5, which is the exit that people mistakenly take to get to any of the stadiums when you should be taking 4th, although sometimes you also take Airport Way.
Yeah, I like Airport.
Those are both wrong. You're supposed to take 4th.
Thank you.
But sometimes people get a little bit antsy. They get off of Dearborn, and then they run into this huge encampment, which caught on fire, spread to nearby brush and trees. Happened around 1:20 a.m. this morning. Thankfully, the fire got contained. There were no reports of injuries. But this continues to happen. And the theme, as it relates to homelessness, whether we're talking about fires, whether we're talking about fights and stabbings and shots fired, overdose deaths, whatever it is, the theme should always be this. It's going to continue to happen unless you do something. It turns out that when you do nothing to a clear and obvious concern or problem, it gets worse. It gets worse and worse and worse. And we live in a city, unfortunately, that allows this kind of stuff to happen over and over and over again while claiming that you have compassion for the people impacted. No, you do not. If your position is to let people sleep outside, if your position is to let people be surrounded by trash and human waste and use needles, if your position allows for folks who are dealing with a mental health issue that's not being treated, an addiction that's not being treated, you are not compassionate. You are a monster. You are a monster. These are human beings that you're okay leaving out on the streets because to you, they are simply props to an end goal, which is driven by ideology, which is to get more money for subsidized housing that you think you're capable of running. You can't run your own office, council members. You can't run a marathon. You definitely can't figure out how to run a housing complex. The government has no business getting anywhere near any of this. Certainly not the Seattle City government. We are in year, 16 of the 10-year plan to end homelessness. Something tells me your approach is not working. We know approaches that do work. We don't have to go that far. We can look at the carrot and stick approach in Marysville, in Bellevue. You go to any park in Bellevue, you're not going to see any homeless people. Not the way that you would see in Seattle. You know why? Because the police there say, hey, we've got an open bed for you. You can either go there now or we're going to kick you out. You don't get to stay in our parks because we actually value our park. We value our residents who pay high taxes so they can live in a safe community, and you are a threat to that. It works in Bellevue. It could work in Seattle, but you know what we're missing here? Any sense of political leadership.
The interview.
A former teacher of the week hosted an ideologically bigoted, overtly political display in her classroom. One freshman took notice, showed a photo to his father, and bam, all of a sudden, the school is investigating. In this very large classroom display over at Timberline High School in Lacey, the social studies teacher portrays Republicans as uneducated, bigoted warmongers. In fact, in one case, there is an image of a noose to represent the Republicans. Joining me on the line is a student who took the photo and highlighted this ideological bigotry. His name is Keenan, and he joins me now. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
So take us through sort of what happened when you saw this display.
When I first saw it in class, I kind of like noticed the noose, but I didn't know what to call it at first. And then I wasn't sure. And then I came home and I told my dad about it because I noticed on the Democrat side, it was like a bunch of just kind of positive stuff. And then I asked my dad and he told me to take a picture of it. And so I did. And then when I sent to him, he kept explaining to me of like what these things are and stuff like that.
So instinctively, you sort of knew something was wrong.
I did, because they made him, because there was another thing of like giving military aid to like kind of different countries and stuff like that, like people we aren't like, countries that we aren't like at good terms with.
So you turned this into your father. Your father is the one, by the way, who reached out, and folks at home, we have permission to talk with Keenan here. Your father complained. You show up to the classroom yesterday. What did you see at the display?
She took everything down, like not even just the eagle. She took down everything, her bumper stickers, just pretty much anything that would represent anything against us or just anything against or for just Democrats and just or something against Republicans.
Yeah, so she took everything down because some of the bumper stickers, as you took in the photograph, also were political. Not all of them were political, but included resist. It included a Colin Kaepernick quote. How did the teacher treat you after this had happened? Because presumably she knows that it was your father that complained.
Yeah, and then that day, so she changed her policy, because before it was like, if you get your phone like shown out, it was like you just get it put in the way, and then now it's like if she sees your phone, she's instantly taking it. And then in particular, I told my dad she took everything down because he told me to, and then I was going to try and take a picture, and she went out in the hall, so I tried to take a picture of everything down. And then she saw me on my phone, so that was kind of my problem for that. And then she took my phone and sent it to the principal's office, which that's on me, but and then another kid had his phone out, and she just told him to put it away.
Okay, so another kid who presumably didn't complain about the display had the phone out, no punishment whatsoever. You had your phone out at the beginning of the class to take a photo of the non-existent display now, and you got punished immediately.
Yeah.
Did you think that that was because your father complained?
Yeah, because at first my dad, when he called them, he made it anonymous, so it was like trying to keep my name out of it. But then he emailed her, and then a bunch of other people emailed her, so then my name was kind of out there, so I just knew I was a target to her.
How did that make you feel when you realized you...
It sure made me feel uncomfortable, just because during the class, too, she would kind of just like stare at me and give me dirty looks.
Jeez, okay. And this is an adult teacher, correct?
Yes.
What are you going to do?
I mean, I'm just doing what my dad told me, just to be polite to all people and don't ever like just treat other people wrong.
Why do you think the display was wrong?
Because I mean, why do I think it's wrong? Because my dad taught me like those kind of things, and not all people are like what she tries to. She tries in her mind. She thinks that all Republicans are bad and stuff like that. And I know my dad has taught me that not everyone's bad, and just everyone should treat everyone equal. And it's not just Democrats that do good; it's everyone. I mean, it's because she presumes that we are racist and that kind of stuff, but we really aren't.
And you say we. Are you a Republican as of this point? You identify as a Republican?
Yes, sir.
Why is that? What makes you a Republican?
It's kind of more because of it's what my dad is, but also because I know a little bit about facts and just kind of... It's just some political facts that I know, and just because my dad is, it kind of runs in my family. Other than that, I don't have much of a reason, but I know my facts if I really like was told to... No, or something like that. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
No, I hear you. And it sounds like your father is teaching you some really good life lessons of not everyone is as evil as maybe some teachers might tell you. You know, the school is now investigating. I don't know what will come of that. They tell me that they're taking this very seriously, and I actually believe them at this point. What would you like to see happen?
Honestly, I mean, she's probably a nice person just outside of school. She's a little crazy because my sister once had her too, and she kind of had problems with my sister too. I don't really want to see people like lose their jobs and stuff like that, but I hope she can think of a different way of us and maybe like just be kind of take this mistake and trying to evolve as a person, not really.
Okay, that is probably the best answer I've ever heard anyone give, regardless of their age. So kudos to you for being so responsible and respectful and reasonable in your response, because there are a lot of people who are going to want her to be fired. I don't know if this warrants a firing, but certainly your response there is very mature. And so kudos to you for pointing out what you saw was wrong. I hope you're not going to get a hard time as a result of this, Keenan. And if you do, you know exactly who to reach out to so we can help.
All right.
I appreciate that, Keenan. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story.
Yep. Have a nice day.
You as well. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this.
It's the best of the Jason Rant Show. Producer Peyton here, bringing you all of the best segments from over the last few weeks as Jason is away. Don't go anywhere. We got a good segment coming up at 5:30, just around the corner. 5 p.m. hour of the Jason Rantz Show, the best of the Jason Rantz Show, continues to roll on here on AM 770 KTTH. It's producer Peyton. Shoot me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Look, I want you guys to download the podcast. I want you guys to subscribe. I want you guys to give this show some of the best ratings that we've had in a long time. That way I can stick it to Jason when he comes back from his little trip to Arizona, and I can say, hey, the Producer Peyton Show, it did well in the ratings. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Download all of today's episodes, all three. They'll be posted there. Jason, I got to give him a little plug. He's going to be on Fox News at night tonight with Shannon Bream. Tune into that in the 9 p.m. hour. But for now, let's jump back into the best of the Jason Rantz Show.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rantz.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rantz, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The impact of the insurance commissioner, Mike Kreidler, to overturn the will of the people and the moves by the legislature rejecting one of his plans is now becoming fully realized. The person who has been pushing back the hardest is my next guest, State Senator Mark Mullett, the Democrat from Issaquah. If you could, Mark, just reset what Kreidler tried to do, which you said no to.
So he came up with this idea, which he's been obsessed with for his entire 20 years, which is that people shouldn't receive discounts on their insurance based on their credit scores. And that's been something that's been around in Washington for the last two decades. And he's always been against it. And he had a bill to ban insurance discounts based on credit scores this last session. It didn't move out of my committee in the form that he preferred. And so when the bill died, he declared it a COVID emergency and just said, we're banning these discounts because it's an emergency. And so this summer, as people renew their insurance, everyone's getting these giant increases in their bills, and they haven't filed a claim in decades.
And what kind of increases are they seeing? Because I know you've been in contact with some folks, especially senior citizens, who seem to be getting hit the hardest.
I mean, the average, and this is anecdotal, just on emails to my office, is about $600. But we've had some as low as $300 and some as high as over $2,000. So it's just been a wide range because some people, their auto insurance, they see the increase right away. But if it's your homeowner's insurance going up, sometimes you don't see the increase until your escrow balance is due the following year. But so it just varies based on people who aren't paying their home insurance by a mortgage are seeing the increase right away. And those are the people who end up being over $1,000 a lot of times.
Well, Kreidler is very clearly abusing his authority here. So what exactly is being done or what can be done?
So we're doing a hearing. I chair the Business Financial Services Committee, and we're actually doing a hearing next Tuesday on the 21st at 10 a.m. And I'm hoping Commissioner Kreidler shows up. I think it'd be nice for him to answer questions directly now that we've realized the huge inconvenience his emergency order has caused on, and this is over a million people taking the insurance.
Well, let me push back a little bit here, because as a Democrat, your party is in power. Is anything going to actually be done? I mean, your committee, which included Democrats, very clearly said no.
And so I don't think the legislature is going to take him to court. So I ended up signing on with the industry who is taking him to court. And I did I guess you call it a legal declaration. I'm not a lawyer. I just sell pizza and ice cream for a living. But in that declaration, I made it was never an emergency. That his office in June of 2020, and I spelled out in the legal declaration that none of this was ever an emergency. This was just his longstanding wish to pass this bill. And the commissioner actually went to court with a judge this month to have my declaration thrown out of the lawsuit because he didn't feel it was relevant. And the judge dismissed that. So when the judge hears the lawsuit next month, they are going to factor in my declaration, my testimony, I don't know what you call it, just clearly indicating that this was never an emergency related to COVID. This was just Mike Kreidler's longtime obsession to ban insurance.
But it sounds like he'll still ultimately get away with this kind of abuse of power. So in a best case scenario, the judge says this is not an emergency, you abuse the rules, and they get rid of it. And yet we still have an insurance commissioner who was able to get away with it without having to suffer any personal situation as a result, no personal consequences.
Yeah, and I agree. And I make this point to my colleagues. I haven't been successful that, you know, just because the insurance commissioner's a Democrat doesn't mean you can't go after him when he breaks the law and does an emergency rule illegally. And I think it's almost more important for us to hold leaders accountable from our same party. But, you know, we're trying to sue the governor over, you know, some of his illegal vetoes around some of the bills this last session. I could not get people to have the same energy to go after Commissioner Kreidler on this issue. And that's why I was forced to kind of do it through the industry association.
When it's that kind of inconsistency that's coming from Democrats in Olympia right now, that is, no offense to you, I hope causes some problems for your party. Not for you, because you actually seem to be honest and fair about all of this. We disagree on a lot of stuff, but we also agree on some stuff. At the end of the day, you've been pretty consistent, and I think that's why so many Democrats don't really like you all that much, particularly the governor is not a fan of State Senator Mark Mullett, who's joining us on the line. Let's talk a little bit about the abuse of power. We're still into this world in which Governor Inslee is making a whole bunch of different mandates without the state legislature. People are not being represented right now. Do you agree with this idea that if you don't get vaccinated, you should lose your job?
So I wish he had called a special session. I think these are big issues. And I, as I've been frustrated with since COVID started in March of 2020, I just think it's bizarre that we're one of the only states in the entire country that hasn't had a special session. And I really think the governor would be wise to look, you know, let the legislature come in and make some of these decisions. I know we'd all be happy to come in and do it. And we might arrive at the same decision he did. We might arrive at a nuanced decision. I don't know where we would arrive, but I think it's really frustrating that we can't seem to have a special session, even when we can do them remotely. I mean, people don't have to even all go to Olympia. Like,
but is that the governor's fault? But is any of this the governor's fault? He's taking advantage of a situation that the Democrats, and I pick on you guys because you guys have the power right now. You have let him do this. Not you specifically, but the Democratic Party clearly isn't putting pressure publicly to get a special legislative session in order.
I think that's a legitimate criticism. That's legitimate criticism. I think we should be down in Olympia sorting through these issues, and I think it's I really wish we were. Hopefully we'll still have a special session this fall, I hope. I don't know if
do you really think that that's going to happen, given just the relative disinterest from not just the governor but also from your leadership?
Betting on that would be like betting on the Husky football team to win right now. I don't know if that'd be the best wager you could make.
It would be a horrible wager. Are you concerned that come October 18th that you're going to see a whole bunch of people get fired from their jobs? There's no indication that the governor was acting in good faith when offering religious exemptions, for example. They're saying yes to the exemptions, but they're saying no to any accommodation. So it seems like this whole process was a sham to begin with. Why not just say, we're not giving you any exemptions, you just have to get the shot?
And I don't know what's going to play out on the 18th. I think what, like you accurately just referred to, as the state patrol, I think they've had a lot of people who've been given exemptions, I think over 200, but it's unclear what accommodations
zero.
They can give them.
They've given zero accommodations up until this point. I'll have some of the specific numbers in an upcoming story, but they've offered zero accommodations to the people that they've offered religious exemptions to up until yesterday.
And I think that, I mean, for me, just to speak really candidly, it's just, this is a hard spot for me because I'm a big believer that the more people get vaccinated, the quicker we're back to normal. And so I don't want to, my frustration with the legislative process not playing out, I think we could have had a much better legislative process, is real. But I also have frustrations that more people aren't vaccinated. I really, as a restaurant owner, I want people vaccinated. I think, you know, my Ben and Jerry's and Bellevue Square Mall is going to be back to normal business when people can go to the mall without wearing a mask and feel like it's normal again. So
the question is, isn't the question really about what works to get people vaccinated? And I would argue that when you're talking about folks who are already hesitant about the vaccine coming in, and instead of talking to them like human beings, blaming them for the current crisis, which they're very clearly not to blame for. I mean, a year ago from today, we had 0% vaccination, and yet we're worse off now. That doesn't make any sense. So do you think the combination of shaming the unvaccinated and mandating it is actually going to get them to put shots in their arms?
Well, and I don't know. I do feel like another thing I think we can always acknowledge is that the people who've had COVID, like if you can demonstrate that you've had it and you have, you know, some sort of antibodies in your blood as a result of that, I think those people are also protected.
100%. That's what the studies say. That's what all the science and data suggests. And the governor keeps saying science and data without actually pointing to any science and data. But, I mean, it is a reasonable position for someone who had COVID like 2 months ago, got over it, are fine now, and are protected to say, no, I don't want to get the vaccine just yet.
Yeah, and I think acknowledging that people who've had COVID, I have not read, the amount of people who've had COVID twice is very small compared to the big scheme of things. And so I think, like you said, I think the science is very strong that those people have antibodies, and if they can prove they have the antibodies, and I think that should also count as a vaccine pass. But for people who haven't had COVID, for the love of God, I really do wish they get vaccinated.
Yeah, I want people to get vaccinated in consultation with their doctor. I'm just not a fan, nor will I ever be, of just mandating it. You know, we're supposed to have medical and bodily autonomy. It's an important right that people are supposed to be able to exercise, but that has gone out the window because Governor Jay Inslee and Joe Biden think they know better than, you know, the actual scientists are saying, no, we don't really need to do this to the folks who already have protections, or frankly, people who don't want it. I get it. I want people to want it. I can't force people to want it. If the vaccine works, then great. I believe it works. That's why I got vaccinated. That's why you got vaccinated. We don't need protection from the unvaccinated. By saying that, as some folks are saying, you just make it seem that the vaccine is not actually safe and doesn't actually work. I'll give you the last word, about 20 seconds.
No, I don't have any last words.
Well,
that's okay.
How about this? The last words will be, I'm going to continue to do what I can to push back against an out-of-control insurance commissioner and a governor who should call a legislative session. How about that?
I don't think I'm getting a Christmas card from either Mike Kreidler or Jay Inslee this year.
Well, I'll send you a Hanukkah card. State Senator Mark Mullett, Democrat from Issaquah, as always, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Now this.
It's the Best of the Jason Rance Show. Producer Peyton is bringing you all of the Best of content all day long. We just got a little bit more left on this show. Of course, you know, we dip out of here at about 6 p.m. So get your last second text in, 1-800-465-8770. Let me know your thoughts on the show today, what kind of programming I can do for Best of content in the future. The Best of the Jason Rance Show. Producer Peyton here in the captain's chair, bringing you all the content that you need to get you through your Monday as we start to wind down, dial down on the night. Thank you so much for keeping with us. We have one last segment coming up. Of course, it's the quick hit and the last rants. I can't leave you guys without one of those. Text me 1-800-465-8770. And also, don't forget, tune into Fox News tonight. Jason is on Shannon Bream, Fox News at night, 9 p.m. Don't miss out. He's going to be back live tomorrow. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'm going to leave you guys with this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Jason Rance, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rance, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
Let's quickly get into an interesting questionnaire that was set up by King County Equity Now, KCEN. This is a group of pretty far to the left radicals who sort of got their place in this world, in this county, during the riots and rallies for BLM. They took advantage of the sort of the mood of the country and got established to demand their version of equity, which, as you can probably imagine, is not true equity at all. This is a group that doesn't believe in equity. They believe in special treatment, and in some cases, they are promoting racism. The reason why I'm talking about them is they've got a questionnaire that's gone out to King County Council candidates and candidates running in Seattle, be it for council, the mayor, or Seattle City Attorney's Office. And if you were trying to figure out which of the candidates who are up for election to support, I highly, highly, highly recommend you vote for anyone running against any person that King County Equity Now endorses. Because looking at this questionnaire, it is clear they are looking for someone who is an insane person, a lunatic, someone who is so far to the left that they would turn this area into an even more unrecognizable King County or Seattle. Because in order to get the endorsement of King County Equity Now, candidates have to support defunding the police. And even when it might exceed their authority, depending on which council position or city attorney position we're talking about here, a candidate has to use that position to end all drug felony and misdemeanor charges, all of them. What reasonable person thinks that that's going to end well? The group wants candidates to allow marijuana profits to be invested, it appears, exclusively in the black community. It demands more funding for so-called, quote, decolonized public charter schools. I don't know what that means. It doesn't actually mean anything. But they say it should come from, quote, a progressive taxation on wealth accumulated through historic theft from black peoples. They want a candidate to push to sell the Red Barn Ranch in Auburn exclusively to a black-owned nonprofit because at one point in its history, back, I think, in 1966, a black person owned the land. But at that point, it was transferred over to Seattle Parks and Recreation. It also wants a candidate to give, quote, all seven vacant Sound Transit parcels of land in South Seattle to black community ownership. Now, of course, that kind of financial decision is illegal. You can't base financial decisions on the basis of race. It's likely illegal. Maybe in Seattle or King County, they've changed it so that it's not. According to this questionnaire, it's called the General Election Candidate Questionnaire. It went to every single candidate for King County Council, King County Executive, Seattle Mayor, Seattle City Attorney, and the two open Seattle Council races. And for all of the questions, candidates are only allowed to answer yes or no. They're limited to only 500 words to explain all of their answers to the 16 questions. And obviously, these questions come with pretty intense and immense implications. They demand a succession plan that explains that the, quote, who the next 10 people are to replace that candidate once they leave office. It's kind of a bizarre question because apparently they think the candidates choose their successors that the voters have, I guess, no say. The question asks the mayoral candidates to pick the person to take their job in the year 2062, I guess. I mean, that's the implication of that question. To be fair, it wasn't specific. It asks candidates, what principles would you be willing to lose your seat over? And I'm hoping that they're willing to lose this seat over announcing their principles here. I hope those losing principles end up getting outlined in the questions here. Because this is, of course, insane. This questionnaire is insane. Activists who make up King County Equity Now are exactly why the problems that they say persist actually persist. It's one thing to help a community better itself, to offer opportunities that maybe are lacking, to focus agenda items on specific ways to reach reasonable goals. But this survey shows that they are exclusively focused on agendas and principles and beliefs and ideology, essentially, that's rooted in a fringe position that doesn't really help anyone. This is the case of so many organizations in this region where they focus on ideology instead of focusing on the people that it hopes to serve. And when you look at who's impacted the most by, for example, defunding the police, something that King County Equity Now believes in, that hurts the black community more than helps them. When you look at the actual data of who's impacted, whose lives are impacted the most negatively when you defund the police, it's the black community because then they are disproportionately impacted when it comes to crimes being committed against them. I've got the survey up and I've got the ridiculous questions up. I hope you'll give it a look and help put some more eyes on it by sharing the link to the story. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my blog. You can check this blog out and any others that I've written this week or really in my history. And don't just read, but please share.
The Last Rant.
Speaking of elections, I today started to do my Thursday video series. I started to do some of the prep work and we start filming on Wednesday afternoon. So tomorrow afternoon. And one of the themes this week is going to be about a worst case scenario for Seattle. And really, this could apply to King County, where the city might not be able to be saved. That maybe we live in a region, at least in Seattle, and maybe King County as a whole, where the folks we view as fringe outnumber everybody else. And I think that that's an important understanding to have if that's true. You have Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who is an abolitionist, who is running for Seattle City Attorney, and right now she's in the lead because she won the primary. that puts her at the top. And I would look at her and say, even a Seattle Democrat has to realize that she's so far to the left that it would be dangerous to put her in that position. But what if the people don't think that? What if the people want that? It's a realization that I think many of us have to start coming to terms with. I don't know what's going to happen in this next election, but if she wins, I think the city not only is done for, but it's by choice. The voters are choosing, and the ones who don't vote are choosing not to vote, choosing to cede over all of this power to legitimately crazy people, ideologically crazy people. And we have to accept that at some point. And at that point, if that were to happen, then the goal shifts a lot for some of you, which is to make sure that it doesn't spread to your community. And you know that it has a tendency to spread. That means you're going to have to step up in a bigger way. Because let me tell you, the amount of momentum that abolitionists will get if Nicole Thomas Kennedy wins Seattle City Attorney, they're not going to be fully realized until it's a little bit too late. And you realize that your city has just been transformed. And that's the last rants.